This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Abby Bennington. How are you, Abby?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good, very good. We're going to be talking about Bordeaux and some of the sub-regions today, particularly designed for WCT Level 3 students, although anybody who's got an interest in wine will find this quite interesting. We mentioned last week, Abby, you do run our WCT Level 3 courses. You're a Bordeaux accredited tutor and you run your own wine tasting business called ABV Tastings. And you're big on Instagram.
Yes, ABV Tastings for anyone's interested, yeah.
Right, so let's talk about the different regions and the sub-regions. I think last week we mentioned that Bordeaux is a maritime climate and you've got a left bank and a right bank. We didn't mention the Entre de Mer as well, though, did we?
No, we didn't mention Entre de Mer, which is between the loosely translates as between the two seas. That's where the confluence of the Dordogne and the Gironde come together. That little bit between the two, which like a little wedge between the two, is called Entre deux mers, or between the two seas. I always think it's an odd translation, yeah. Particularly because those little rivers are anything but seas. But anyway, it sticks. So that little area, Entre deux mers, predominantly white wine production there. Any red wine produced can't be called Entre deux mers. It's just white, labeled as a generic appellation as Bordeaux.
Yeah, and most of the whites are, well, they could be Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc, but they tend to be more Sauvignon Blanc dominated these
days.
They are more, yes.
And many of them are actually almost 100% Sauvignon Blanc, particularly the easy drinking varietals.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about the left bank and the right bank, because let's face it, on the left bank, you've got a lot of your really top-end, exciting wines. And then on the right bank, you've still got Pomerol and Saint-Emilion, which are quite exciting. And then you've got Côte de Bordeaux.
Côte de Bordeaux, the coats, the slopes of Bordeaux, yes.
The slopes of Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the left bank. So the left bank is made up of two parts. You've got the Haut-Médoc, and you've also got what people often call the Médoc, but technically, I suppose it's called Basse-Médoc or Low-Médoc. When I first joined the wine trade, I used to get confused because oat means high. And I was wondering, sometimes it's not really high ground, but I realize now it just means upriver, if you like, you know, because you always go from oat to bass from the high, you know, because obviously further up the river, rivers always flow downhill anyway. So that's the way I think about it anyway.
Oh, it's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, absolutely.
I suppose the big difference between Haut-Médoc and Basse-Médoc, or Médoc, we'll just call it Médoc, is the soils, because the lower part, Basse-Médoc, that was all reclaimed by the Dutch.
Yes, it was. Yeah, very important.
Yeah, and it's a lot of clay there. There's a little bit of gravel, but there's a lot of clay there, which means it's cooler. We mentioned that last week. And because it's cooler, you're going to see a lot more Merlot being dominated. Whereas in the Haut-Médoc, you've got that lovely gravel, which means
that little gravel outcrop, that little kind of that little base that really makes it possible to ripen those Cabernet Sauvignon grapes, of which the grape blends are often dominated by.
Yeah. But Merlot is the main grape variety in Bordeaux. But let's face it, all the top wines, apart from, on the left bank anyway, all the top wines on the left bank always have a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon in there.
Yep, important.
The other region we didn't really talk about is Graves. We forgot to mention Graves because I always sort of lump it on the left bank. You've got Médoc, Haut-Médoc, and then Graves coming back down. And the big one there is what, Pessac-Léognan?
Yes, Pessac-Léognan, or Léognan, depending on how you pronounce it. But I
certainly
say,
not the way I pronounce it.
Pessac-Léognan is the way I say it. So Pessac-Léognan, as you say, is in the south of the Gironde. And it's an area, Graves translates as gravel. So it's a kind of easy translation. And this is another area where you have that gravelly outcrop, which makes it possible to ripen those grapes. It is an area that they produce both high quality red varietals and white. And it's the whites that have gained a lot of prestige as well recently, or not recently, in the last sort of couple of generations. And those are a blend of both Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon.
And they also have quite a lot of oak influence, which is a little bit unusual. We'll talk about the white wines later on in another video. But they are different to a lot of the more generic, cheaper white wines from Bordeaux.
Very different, yes.
The other thing that you get in the Graves is Sauterne and Barsac.
Oh yeah. So how could we forget Sauternes and Barsac? Yeah. I mean, some of the greatest white wines, dessert wines or sweet wines of the world are produced down here. Yes. I mean, these will tend to be, once again, a blend of Sauvignon and Semillon. And these wines have been, well, not definitely, but often affected by noble rot. But of course, for those, do you want me to go into noble rot now? Or
just touch on it.
Okay. So these wines, these dessert wines, these very famous dessert wines have been affected by noble rot, which is basically a mold that penetrates the skin of the grape variety, and it shrivels. The water comes out of it, shrivels. And this happens right at the end of the season, right at the end of the ripening season. And because it happens right at the end of the ripening season, this is called noble rot. And it's something that winemakers would like to have. Happens earlier on in the season before they're ripe. It becomes grey rot, and nobody wants that. But noble rot helps shrivel the grapes, and the shriveled grapes then harvested with other grapes and blended and made into these great white wines, which have not only have such complexity, things like rye bread, marmalade, all those delicious, unctuous dried apricot notes, but also have the ability to age for significant periods.
Okay, so we'll do a bit more on Sauternes and Barsac later on, when we're talking about those sweet wine making in Bordeaux. If we go across the river now to the right bank, mm-hmm. You've got Saint-Emilion, which is probably, I think probably from a volume point of view, it's more important than Pomerol, but from a quality point of view, Pomerol, Saint-Emilion, I think of them as very similar.
Saint-Emilion is quite a confusing area for people. I mean, obviously, anyone who knows anything about Bordeaux knows there's lots of different classifications. So I won't go too much into that. But the key thing to remember about Saint-Emilion is the better producing areas will probably have that little gravelly outcrop, which we mentioned, which makes it possible even in this inland area to ripen some Cabernet Sauvignon.
Although, to be fair, Saint-Emilion we normally think is Merlot dominated.
But absolutely. Merlot is queen over on this side of the river. And most of the wines produced in this region are, as you say, Merlot dominant.
Yeah. And if you look at Saint-Emilion, they've got the foothill, and in the foothills, it's quite sandy and you get these very light wines. I don't think they're technically Saint-Emilion. They're normally Saint-Emilion with the name of the village that they're from, and they're not necessarily the best Saint-Emilions. But if you get a one that just says Saint-Emilion, you're starting to get into these better quality Saint-Emilions. And then right at the very top, you've got the plateau, and that tends to be where all the really good Saint-Emilions are. And that's where that little bit of gravel is as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's Saint-Emilion, as I say, is a very confusing area. There's a lot of different classifications going on there. But as you say, the higher you go, basically the higher the quality of these grape varietals.
The other thing is that Saint-Emilion's got, which is a little bit weird, is limestone. You don't see a lot of limestone in Bordeaux, and there's definitely limestone. I remember going into some caves where they were storing wines one time, and you could see the roots coming down through the ceiling of the vineyard. And the caves were really deep, so the vines had gone really, really deep through the soils to get into the cave there. But yeah, there's limestone there. Limestone's wines tend to be more acidic. You've got that acidity that helps set things off. And you've got to be super careful with something like Cabernet Sauvignon, because Cabernet Sauvignon is a high acid, high tannin wine. You get acidity and tannins. They sort of set each other off quite firmly. So Merlot is a much riper grape variety that can handle that extra acidity, I think.
No, I agree. I think Merlot, when it's grown in this particular area, you've got these wonderful, plummy, lush, much more approachable in youth, these wines, than as we're talking about in the left bank. But that doesn't mean that they're not important. It doesn't mean that they're not complex. It doesn't mean that they're not of extremely high caliber. But these wines are generally understood to be more approachable in youth.
Yeah. The other thing that limestone gives you, which is a bit weird, is that limestone is both porous, but it holds on to water. So if it rains a lot, it normally has cracks. So the water goes down through the cracks away from the vine, which is great. But also if it's really dry, if you remember 2003, a long time ago, but I remember 2003, it was the first time I ever clocked a vintage in Bordeaux. And it was really, really hot and dry. And everybody was struggling with over high alcohols and all this sort of thing. And it was drought conditions in Bordeaux, which is a little bit unusual for a maritime climate. And what happened was Saint-Emilion did really well because the vines had access to that reliable water from the limestone. But also the soils were a little bit cooling, which helped the freshness of the wine as well. So one of the things about Bordeaux is that you get a lot of vintage variation. And that's partly because of different soils, different climates, weather comes in at different random times, that type of thing.
Yes, I mean, you're absolutely right. Those kind of soils are really good for basically holding on to a little bit of water and then releasing what's not needed by the vine. So as you say, in those particularly difficult years, those soils can be really make or break for a lot of wineries.
And in a really hot year, for example, if you're on gravel, you probably find that the vines just dry out and they shut down because of the heat. They can't get enough moisture. You do get these vintage variations, and different parts of Bordeaux can have really good years. Some years, times it's really good for sweet wine, some because you get a lot of botrytis and you've got the conditions for it. Some years it's dry, some years it's wet. So you do get a lot of vintage variation, and sometimes it's not a consistent, you know, everybody did well in Bordeaux, and sometimes different parts of it do. Mm-hmm. Let's touch on Côte de Bordeaux. What are the subregions in Côte de Bordeaux?
So you've got Côte de Bordeaux, which loosely translates as the slopes of Bordeaux. You've got the key ones that you need to be aware of are Blaye, Cadillac, and you might want to remind me the other two.
Franck
and
Castillon.
Yes. These are very important subregions within the area. As I say, these are not the highest quality wine. I like to tell students or people interested in this area that this is often where you can get quite good value, and they're not to be overlooked.
Yeah. In fact, they used to be quite separate regions, but they were always a little bit overlooked by everybody because they weren't always the highest quality. And as a result, they got together as a almost like for marketing purposes, really, didn't they, to create
yes.
that Côte de Bordeaux?
They did. They came together because they just, as individuals, they were not shining through. But together, they came together, and that's what we know as the Côte. So it's like a grouping of four. Actually more than that, but the key ones that need to know that we talk about are the four here today as a marketing perspective to kind of become stronger within the selling market.
Cool. And I suppose we should really touch on the subregions of Haute-Médoc because we started on Haute-Médoc,
yes.
or Entre-Pyrénées, but we got to Haute-Médoc pretty quickly, and then we moved on from it. And one thing that you can say about the Haute-Médoc, there's subregions, and they are, do you know them?
I hope so. You've got Saint-Estèphe,
yep.
Saint-Julien, mm-hmm. Margaux, mm-hmm. and Pauillac.
Do you know what? Pauillac, Pomerol, and Pommard.
Pommard, yes.
I just struggle all the time trying to remember those. Okay, but the thing about them is, if you get really into Bordeaux, they all have their own individual characteristics, but as a general rule, I would just rate them as good quality village level wines, often Cabernet Sauvignon dominated, and don't get too bogged down unless you're really an absolute Bordeaux nut about the intricacies of different villages.
Yeah, or go and visit them.
Or go visit them. All right then, I think we'll wrap it up there. Cheers.
No problem.